This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And good morning, Roger. And with our technology and broadcasting today, we always say good morning, world, because, well, in the past week, I've received notes and emails from people who listen to the show in the United Kingdom and people who listen to the show in South America, some of the soybean growers in Brazil who check in with us thanks to all of the technology that we have. But we look forward every Saturday morning to talking about the world's most basic industry, producing food. That's what it's all about in the world of agriculture, whether the temperature is 56 degrees below zero, as it was in Cotton, Minnesota on Thursday, or whether it's in South America, probably in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, as they're beginning harvest in Brazil and Argentina. But this morning, one of the favorite subjects of all get-togethers in rural coffee shops across America, farmland values, farmland sales, and who is buying farmland today. We're going to get that this morning from the Senior Vice President of Real Estate Operations at Farmers National Company in Omaha, Nebraska. And as I mentioned, we'll talk markets with Greg Groh, because right now, people who are traders and producers and marketers of agricultural products are playing catch-up on information, and information that's vital to the trading and the selling and the buying of agricultural products. With the government shutdown, that came to a stop. So now I'm beginning to see number reports on production and exports and everything else coming in dated mid-December, when we started the government shutdown. So we're playing catch up on that, and we'll be talking about that this morning. And then Max Armstrong will be checking in from New Orleans and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Convention. All of that coming up, and we'll start the conversation this morning talking farmland values when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. The ongoing question at every rural coffee shop in America is, what's happening to farmland prices? What's my farm worth and all of that? So we're going to go to the man who keeps an eye on it all the time, and that's Randy Dickhoot, who is Senior Vice President of Real Estate Operations and based in Omaha, Nebraska, with Farmers National Company. And Randy, good morning, and how cold is it where you are?
Good morning, Orion. It's a lot colder than I care it to be. It was about 12 or 14 below this morning.
And you are in Omaha?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So the big question is, what direction are we seeing for farmland prices, up or down?
Well, I term it that the land market's holding its breath. It's buyers are being more cautious, and farmers being the predominant buyers of most farm and ranch land that comes up for sale. Stands to reason with the tougher economic times and production agriculture and low commodity prices. The uncertainty on trade issues, we're right in the middle of loan renewal season and working with their lenders. And we know there's less working capital out there in farm country. So they're being more cautious, but if a good property comes up for sale, there's still capital in the neighborhood to buy that farm that everybody wants.
Were there any big surprises in 2018 as far as farmland value?
I think the biggest surprise for most is how stable it really held. You know, depending on the state and the quality of the farmland, it actually increased just a little bit in some places. Other places it decreased a little bit. So on average, you could call it pretty stable. And I think that surprises everybody with those uncertainties out there in the market. And again, those lower farm incomes. And watching interest rates creep up a little bit. So I think as it stayed stable the last year or so has just surprised most people.
Who is buying farmland mostly?
Farmers typically will buy about 70 to 80% of what comes up for sale in a neighborhood for good farmland, good quality. Recreational land, of course, that's different. But there, in some states, depending on the rules and regulations, there are outside investors, some investment funds buying, but that's still a very small percentage.
I can remember the day when I would get calls saying, I hear the Japanese are buying up all the farmland they can in the United States, or I hear this country is buying all of the farmland it can. Is that still being rumored around the country?
Well, I think people ask that every once in a while, but if you look at statistics out of University of Illinois and others and our experience, it's, you know, 1% to 2% of the farmland in the U.S. is owned by foreign or fund interests. So it's still a small percentage. They have a different outlook on the return on investment, what they want to earn from that farm than the farmer or a local investor. So they're not buying up everything.
Looking at your regional land value reports, I'm going to focus on two areas that will involve more of our listeners here on WGN. Iowa, Wisconsin, you said land sales activity in Iowa held even in 2018, fairly steady prices. And then Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, Missouri, and Arkansas, values for good quality farmland continues to hold fairly steady across the Eastern Corn Belt and the Delta. So if anybody in those states are contemplating farmland sales, what kind of advice would you give them, Randy?
I think they need to really understand their local market and the quality and type of land that they have. That's a big determinant. As there's more demand, a little more interest in buying that good quality farm that comes up for sale next door in a neighborhood. Some areas are more competitive than others. That plays into the land values that we see day in and day out, the differences that we can't always explain. But some have the capital in those neighborhoods. They want to buy it, and they can. Makes a difference. Other areas are not as aggressive. So we're still looking at that stable, but and a lot of that reason is there's just not as much on the market for sale. There's less supply out there, so the demand that's there can buy what comes up for sale.
Since I grew up on a dairy farm in Wisconsin, and I'm looking at the number of dairy farms going out of business in the past year, are dairy farmers more willing to sell than other crop or livestock enterprises?
Yes, they are. Most farmers don't sell land unless they can trade into something better or they're forced to. With the dairy farm situation right now, I mean, it's a very tough time and has been for a number of years for dairy producers. And I know as some get close to retirement, there are farm sales and they're selling their land with a few of those. Hopefully they don't have to, but some are. But there are definitely some change going on in the production areas.
So as we look forward, if we get a resolution to the China-U.S. trade war and some of the other trade issues that we have been going through for the past year, do you think farmland values might go up because of that?
I don't know if I'd really forecast them to go up. I think they'd stay stable because you took those uncertainties out because there is pressure on the downside. That we see with the continuing lessening of working capital in farm country, the lower incomes. rising interest rates, although those look like they're going to be kind of held steady here for a while. So I think if we stay stable for the next year or two would be real good.
Now, prepare people who are going to put their land on sale for the issues that get involved in family operations and enterprises, because isn't it important that mom and dad have something in writing in a will so that when they're no longer around, at least we have some rules for the kids to work by?
Oh, absolutely, Orion. That's a good point. We see that over and over as we handle management of farms and ranches and selling farms and ranches for families that have inherited it. And if mom and dad have done a good job of planning that out, it helps that next generation to either keep the farm, keep it as a family legacy, or how to best sell it and who should sell it. So over and over I see that working with families as they inherit that it becomes very important. Good communication and seek out good experts to help them with whichever direction they go.
And when it comes to putting a farm up for sale, is there one time of the year that's better than any other for doing that?
Well, used to be land auctions would typically happen, you know, after harvest, maybe into the winter time before spring planting. Now we'll see them spread out throughout the year, but the predominant time would be that right before harvest and especially after harvest before the end of the year to get it sold, and in the winter time leading up till about the 1st of March so that the land can sell and the new buyer have the right to farm it or operate it for the new season.
And then the other question that goes a little bit beyond farmland sales, that's the cost of rent for farmland, up or down?
That is staying pretty steady. I know in our shop with the farms we manage, our rents are really staying steady this year. There's competition by farmers to farm more land, even though the margins are definitely tighter. But it's a volume business anymore, and spreading out their fixed cost over more acres helps them out and with their overall cost structure. We do see some pressure. If those rents were above market, those are coming down for sure. But on the whole, we're fairly steady to just barely down some.
And final question, how big an area does Farmers National Company work in farmland management or sales?
We cover 28 states, anywhere from upstate New York all the way to the West Coast in the state of Washington. But we're really concentrated in the Grain Belt, for sure.
Well, thank you for taking time to visit with us this morning. And as farmland values fluctuate, we'll probably get back to you. But thank you and have a good year.
Thank you, Orion, and look forward to it. And best wishes to everybody in production agriculture this year.
Randy Dickhout, who is the Senior Vice President in charge of real estate at Farmers National Company. We're at 24 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, and talking to you from Huntley, Illinois, where my studio is located. Temperature on my outdoor thermometer this morning, 21 above, not below. I guess that would tend to be a heat wave. It was interesting last night because during this very cold weather, we pretty much stayed in the house, didn't travel outside except for trips that were absolutely necessary. And so last night, we had dinner at Jameson's in Sun City, Huntley. And the place was very busy. I just, looking around, had the feeling that cabin fever had caught up with everybody that had stayed in the house to avoid the cold temperatures. And they decided it was time to get out of the house. And so at Jameson's last night, a lot of people were there to enjoy a night out after the cold weather that we have had. And, of course, now that we're into the month of February, we haven't even mentioned Groundhog's Day, have we? Groundhog's Day, today, February 2nd. And I don't know if Punxsutawney Phil is still in business out in Pennsylvania. What about our groundhog up in Woodstock, Illinois? Don't know if those animals are still in business predicting how much winter or how much sooner we'll move into spring. But I always looked at it, the time between Groundhog's Day and the first day of spring is generally 6 weeks. And so that's, I think, a pretty good guess on how long we'll have the temperatures we have. But in the month of February, a lot of activity as the farm meeting calendar continues to fill up. We have the two major farm equipment shows this month. The World Ag Expo in Tulare, California. That's a huge show out there. And then, of course, the National Farm Machinery Show in Louisville, Kentucky. Another huge show taking place in the month of February. Convention-wise, the National Association of Conservation Districts will be holding their 73rd annual convention. And I'll say this for farm groups in the wintertime, they do pick warmer climates to hold conventions because that convention with the conservation districts will be in San Antonio, Texas. And that's coming up this week. Also, the National Outstanding Young Farmer Awards Program. And that comes up next weekend. It'll be in the Quad Cities area. And 10 state Outstanding Young Farmer finalists will be vying for the title of National Outstanding Young Farmer for the current year. They'll select 4 of the 10 couples. I judged that competition once or twice, and I said, I'll never do it again because that is a tough one to judge. It really is. So we do have several activities and events coming up. Oh, and the USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum, that's the biggest event that USDA hosts every year. That will be in just outside Washington, D.C. in Virginia, and that's coming up on February 21 and 22. And even though the National Cattlemen gathered in New Orleans this past week, some state cattlemen conventions as well, including the Wisconsin Cattlemen's Association, February 8 and 9. That'll take place at the Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells. So cattlemen in America's Dairyland will be gathering in Wisconsin Dells for the convention of the Wisconsin Cattlemen's Association. A lot of activity that takes place when farmers can't do much in the way of farming, crops at least. The livestock people have to keep doing what they do. And so we'll be checking and looking in on many of those events and sharing them with you here on WGN Radio Chicago. And coming up in part two of the Saturday morning show, something happened to me this past week that hasn't happened in decades. And I'll share that with you on Samuelson Says. And then Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services, he will join us to talk markets and to talk about how traders and producers are able to absorb and look at all of the delayed reports that the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Commerce was not able to release during the partial government shutdown. All of those numbers are coming out now, and this week, for example, we received some trade numbers and export figures dated December 20th. And we'll be getting more of those as they update them in the coming weeks here on the USDA scene. So a lot of stuff to catch up with. We'll talk to Greg Groh about that. And, of course, the temperatures of the past week have created a lot of reminiscing for a lot of people, including yours truly, because the coldest temperature I ever experienced on the dairy farm in Wisconsin as a kid growing up happened back in 1951, and I'll never forget it. The temperature on our barn thermometer hit 51 below zero. Not wind chill, but actual temperature. The mercury in the thermometer actually disappeared. Couldn't see it anymore. So that 51 is minus 51 is the coldest I've ever experienced. But boy, it was chilly. No, it was downright cold this week. Well, right now, time for Samuelson Says. And going to talk about something that has never happened to me before when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, something happened to me last week that has never happened in all the years that I've been writing Samuelson Says for newspapers and delivering my commentary on radio and TV. You may recall last week on Samuelson Says, I urged our legislators in Washington, D.C., regardless of party, to grow up and stop being childish in their discussions and debates on issues that are extremely important to all of us. And what a surprise! I did not get one negative comment concerning my thoughts. I was not called stupid or dumb or even worse. They all tended to agree with me, and I can't remember the last time that has happened since I've been doing Samuelson Says. So let me share with you just one email that was typical of the emails I received. This one says, quote, Samuelson Says said it all this morning. Don't think I will live to see most of the things you talked about happen. Our congressmen and senators will never vote for term limits. They have a good thing going for them, and the only reason there are term limits for the president is because there is very little, if any, opportunity for members of Congress to become president. Keep up your thoughts. They are right on. End of quote. Well, thank you. And thank you to the rest of you for supporting my thoughts. And I fully agree with you that members of the House and Senate will never vote for term limits because then they would have to abide by the rules they impose on the rest of us, like Social Security for retirement and Medicare for health insurance. Members of Congress should remember that serving in the Congress is not a lifetime job or career. It is a privilege, and the voters will let them know when they are not doing a good job. So I still say, time to grow up, be adults, and get back to making sound decisions for our country. This is why legislators have been elected, to work for the people, not their own self-interest. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. We're at 22 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show, and we're going to check in with Greg Groh to talk markets when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services, joins us today as we take a look at the marketplace. And suddenly, with the government back in business, Greg, we're looking at a wealth of information that's coming going back to December. How do you, as a trader, deal with that?
Well, it's kind of interesting. You know, the longest government shutdown we've ever been through backlogged a lot of information and a lot of very important information, especially the January crop report and our weekly export sales data. Dealing with it is tough. We would have liked to have seen all of this come out so we could all analyze it and use it and make decisions. But it's going to trickle out slowly between now and mid to late February, and it's going to be a little tough for us.
And February 8th, we are going to finally get final crop production figures for last year?
Yes, we're going to finally get our final yield numbers. It's something we are looking forward to. It's going to be a mixed report. We'll find lower yields, I think, on both corn and soybeans from last year, but we're probably also going to see the continued difficult demand expectations. USDA most probably will have to reduce export demand in beans, which will probably offset any lower yield expectation there and leave ending stocks about where they are.
And as we look at the numbers that are coming out, will we now get back on schedule if there is no other government shutdown?
Well, isn't that the interesting question, Orion? We don't know. We're going to be going into mid-February with an expectation that maybe our government will get something accomplished. I'm not so sure.
This far, any really surprises in the numbers that you've seen?
No, I think really the thing now we need to know is China doing some buying? There's been a lot of talk that they're going to come in and do some things with U.S. agriculture, be it soybeans, be it DDGs, maybe ethanol, maybe wheat. All these expectations are there. We just need to see some proof of it now, and we're going to see that in our weekly export data.
Speaking of ethanol, I noted that we're seeing some change in the attitude of the European Union on soybeans that are used for biofuel and maybe corn.
I haven't followed that really close, but I do think that there are pushbacks against the use of, say, palm oil and biodiesel in certain areas. Some of that type of thing is occurring. Typically, when we have periods of low oil prices, we tend to find struggles sometimes with biofuels initiatives, and we're probably entering into a bit of a period like that.
And I guess we have to talk about weather here in North America. It has had an impact on markets.
I think it's this last week has been, you know, as we all know, the coldest weather we've ever seen in some cases here in the upper Midwest. Certainly that has slowed down grain movement at a time when corn demand is probably a little stronger. Animals need more calories during periods like this of cold weather. And certainly that probably has helped the corn market steady up a little bit in here. Kind of a mix kind of a thing here in soybeans. Transportation, though, should get back online with the thaw that's coming. Don't need any more of these big deep freezes for a while.
And so far, Mississippi traffic because of ice been a problem?
Haven't heard much there. Some jams on the Illinois are starting to appear, but haven't heard a lot of problems yet as far as the lower system.
And it was interesting this past week that Cargill closed some grain plants in the Midwest.
Well, that's probably an indication of slowness in the trade. We our export demand is off. We aren't seeing much change in basis levels indicating any new demand. So it's not surprising that merchandisers may be taking a bit of a slow turn at things.
So what are you hearing about planting for 2019? Are we looking for any big changes?
Well, this is the big question. And going back into the fall when the tariffs first hit and the soybean market took the tumble, a lot of speculation that we would drop a large amount of soybean acres this next spring in favor of corn. Certainly we're going to see some movement. But when I talk to growers, especially from Illinois to the east, a lot of folks still talk about normal rotation. When you get talking to people in the west, and especially the northwest, up into the Dakotas, there's a lot of acres up there that could move. And I expect to see acres down, but maybe not in soybeans, but maybe not as much as we had talked a little bit earlier, a couple months ago. Corn acres will be up a little bit, but maybe not the kind of surge. When you look at your corn-soybean ratio for new crop, it's been hovering at about 2.3, right in the middle, 2.5 typically in cents beans, 2.0 in cents corn. So we're kind of in the middle. We're going to see some acreage shift, but maybe not as big as what had been talked about.
So what are you telling your farm customers they should be doing right now in the marketplace?
I think soybeans right now are at a very high level versus the reality of the current global supply. No doubt the soybean situation in Brazil, maybe not quite what it could have been with some season drought, but it's a bad, it's a heavy supply situation globally. Any kind of rallies that occur here this spring in the soybean market should be used as good hedging opportunities. Same thing with corn. I think the markets are going to struggle to remain somewhat in the same range we've seen the last couple of years. And any time this spring that the new crop corn pokes up into the 4.25, 4.15 area, and I think those are good places to get some marketing done.
Max has been telling us from the Cattlemen's Convention in New Orleans that things are looking not bad for cattle producers. What are you finding in livestock?
Well, I think the beef demand has been very good for both pork and beef. Exports have been very strong. I wish we could have been seeing export data here during late December and early January. My feeling is probably those exports have remained pretty vibrant. I'm optimistic that cattle prices will remain pretty firm into the spring on normal seasonal demand. Hog prices have settled back here some. A lot of speculation that China is going to be increasing its demand for U.S. pork. If that occurs, I'd expect to see pork prices also strengthen some this spring.
And you can't talk China without talking African swine fever. Do you think the numbers we're seeing are realistic?
That's a real hard one, Orion. I talk to a lot of people about this each day, and there's a lot of different opinions on where that stands in China right now. And quite candidly, the information there coming to us is wanting, and no doubt there's been a cull there, but the extent of it is hard to determine right now.
Are you hearing much about European Union activity in the trade agreement area that would change their policy on technology from our country that going into their area?
I haven't heard much on that myself, haven't read much in that area myself, Orion.
But it's certainly something that we have been trying to get. And, of course, originally they said they didn't want to talk agriculture issues at all. But I think maybe that's changed.
Well, I think under the trade initiatives that have been put in place over the last year, I think Europe has an incentive to increase its import of U.S. agriculture to help with some of the trade imbalances that we're dealing with right now.
The message I'm hearing from producers for the last couple of months is we're down today because of China-U.S. trade. We're up tomorrow, and it seems to be almost on a daily basis that prices move up or down based on the latest information, right or wrong, from the China-U.S. trade discussion.
Well, that is true, but you'll notice that the ranges are much smaller.
Yep.
Yes, we go up and down with different tweets and pronouncements and rumors that fly in out of the market, but we've been confined to a pretty tight range. You know, we've been trading wheat in about a 15 or 20 cent range here over the last month, corn maybe a 10 cent range over the last month, and beans maybe a little bit bigger than that. But yes, we do see some roller coaster ups and downs, but it's interesting to me, the narrowness of the trade.
Certainly not the volatility we've seen on Wall Street.
Certainly not that kind of thing with the stock market moving up 1% or down 1% almost on a daily basis.
So it's still a tough decision for a lot of growers to make on what they are going to do in the coming year. When do we get the planting intentions report?
We won't get our intentions till late March, and that's hopefully that we don't have any further government shutdowns to deal with. But we'll have an outlook conference. If we don't have a shutdown in mid-February, the USDA has announced they will hold their outlook conference at the end of the month. That'll be our first look at things after their budget analysis they did right at the end of the year. But again, the most important number comes on our March acreage intentions at the end of March.
And then we wait till June to find out what we really planted.
What we actually got in the ground.
Yep,
that's right.
Right. Well, I don't envy you the job that you have, so what seems to be the mood of the farmers that you're talking to?
I think farmers are optimistic. They understand the administration's attempt to renegotiate trade. I think farmers want to see these issues resolved.
And we're still waiting to get approval of the, well, I call it NAFTA number 2, but still, that has not made it through Congress.
Still waiting to see that. You know, the changes between the old NAFTA and the new agreement don't look to be all that big.
Yep.
Hopefully Congress will take up that and get it done.
And dairy farmers particularly are hoping that it'll be fixed a little bit to their advantage.
There are some benefits there for dairy.
Yep. As always, a pleasure to talk to you, even when it's 20 below zero in our part of the country. Our visit with Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services. Well, for whatever reason, New Orleans has been the agricultural capital of the world here in 2019. Farmers and ranchers and agricultural producers from all over the country have traveled to New Orleans, including this gentleman.
Max Armstrong joining you from New Orleans, Louisiana, somewhat of an agricultural capital for meetings this winter thus far. With the American Farm Bureau having been here, sweet potato growers, the sheep producers, and now the cattle industry. We talked about Washington quite a bit here because it really matters so much to this sector of agriculture. And Colin Woodall in the Washington office of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association shared a little bit of insight with the changing makeup of Congress and how, yes, there's going to be an effort to educate.
You know, Max, our job is to make new friends, and that's exactly what we're doing, and we look at it as an opportunity because these are people new to Congress. In most cases, these are people that don't have any exposure to American agriculture. So it's an opportunity for us to talk about what the U.S. cattle business is, what we do each and every day to put nutritious beef on the table, and try to get them on our side, and that's Republicans and Democrats alike. So even though there's a lot of new faces there, we're not running around too concerned because, again, we do see it as an opportunity.
When you see the makeup of the House shift the way it has, does that underscore, Colin, the importance of keeping the nutrition programs in the Farm Bill?
Oh, I think it does. Everybody continues to question why we have a Farm Bill that is mostly made up of nutrition programs. I think this is a great example of why, and will continue to be why, moving forward. There are more people that are representing urban and suburban areas that don't understand agriculture. We need to make sure that they are hitched to agriculture policy and understand that those nutrition programs that they're supporting in the Farm Bill would not be possible if it wasn't for all the great work that America's farmers and ranchers do to actually provide that food.
Funding is an issue here, isn't it, to make sure that that Farm Bill is implemented?
Oh, absolutely, and we're looking at that right now, of course, with the government shutdown, because we would like to see the implementation of this new Farm Bill as quickly as possible. The shutdown kind of put the kibosh on that a little bit. And so the question right now is, will we be able to come up with a deal between now and February 15th to continue funding the government, or will we see another shutdown? Now, we do hope, and we are pushing on both the House and Senate and the administration to find a pathway forward, because we want to see things like our foot and mouth disease vaccine bank be implemented. That was one of our big asks in the last Farm Bill, and we want to make sure we're working with the Secretary to get that implemented as quickly as possible.
We always enjoy the visits with Colin, and as you know, Orion and Steve, he's a straight shooter. He tells you what he sees happening in Washington, and that group at the Washington office of the NCBA has to stay nimble, as you know, with all of the changes taking place these days.
You're absolutely right, and both you and I, Max, have enjoyed our visits over the years with Colin Woodall, who really has his pulse on the cattle industry and what's happening there. Something that comes out monthly that I enjoy looking at is the top vehicles sold in the U.S. month by month. I'll share with you some of the names in the January report when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, every month, automakers in the United States report sales of vehicles, and it's a fascinating list. And as I looked at January, a couple of surprises. Normally, the top three selling vehicles month by month have been pickup trucks. But this month of January, the number one selling vehicle was the Ram pickup. And that's it, as far as pickups are concerned. That was followed by the Honda CR-V, the Nissan Rogue, the Toyota Corolla, the Toyota RAV4, the Toyota Camry, the Honda Civic, the Honda Accord, Toyota Tacoma, Jeep Grand Cherokee, rounding out the top 10 vehicles sold in the United States in January. And the increase in the sale of Ram pickups up 19% over the previous January 2018, up 19%. Quick look at markets as we ended the trading week on Friday. Livestock futures ended the week with April hogs at $60.12 a hundredweight, down 7 cents. February live cattle up 87 at 125.67, and the April feeder cattle contract down 20 cents at 144.07. As far as the grain trade is concerned, soybeans, interesting day yesterday, moving higher a day after the vice premier of China, following high-level bilateral trade talks in Washington, D.C., announced that China would buy an additional 5 million tons of U.S. soybeans. Chinese state-owned firms bought at least 1 million tons of U.S. beans on Friday for shipment. That, according to three traders who had knowledge of the deals, and one trader with direct knowledge of the deals said total purchases of U.S. soybeans by China amounted to 2.2 million tons. We're going to keep an eye as those reports begin to come out following the government showdown to see how much really China is buying from the United States when it comes to soybeans. And one trader said, because we've got a Brazilian harvest coming on and we've got an abundance of U.S. and world soybean stocks, the market can easily absorb 5 million tons and has done so. So at the end of the day yesterday, soybean prices came down from their highs. March beans up 2.25 cents, 9.17¾. March corn up 1¾ cents at 3.78¼. March wheat was up 8 cents, $5.24¼ a bushel. So those are the prices. We'll start trading on Monday when we resume trading at the Board of Trade and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Well, as always, we thank you for being with us here on Saturday morning. We thank Brett Jackson for doing the engineering work. And now it's 6 o'clock. Time for the news. And the Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20 WGN Chicago.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on the Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.